This is number 5. And we've been talking in this section about the pastor's difficult people and how they present a unique challenge that's different from anybody else in the church. If the pastor's difficult person has too much personal informal power, there can be major problems. And let me give you some examples. One pastor told me, "I'm worried about my church. I sense that people like me and things seem to be going all right. However, I worry about Dr. Barker. She's a professional counselor, and what she says goes around here. People quote her, look up to her, and she's been instrumental in some of the important families here, that's for sure. But she has some imbalances, I think. Some ideas that I don't really agree with and I think aren't helpful for our people. But, I just don't dare say anything of caution about her. I really think if it came down to it, people would sooner see me leave than her. Oh, I know I do need to go and talk with Dr. Barker, but believe you me, I am really dreading it. It feels to me if I were to make one small misstep with her, I could really upset the apple cart, and there would be problems all through the church as a result. So Dr. Barker, although she doesn't have any position of authority in the church, she certainly has power, doesn't she? Here's another example of power in the church. This is about Aunt Gert. Aunt Gert is now in her mid-70s. And she's been in this church for over 50 years. You talk about power. She has, in her time, held every position except elder or pastor. Although she doesn't have any official position any longer, she might as well, as the pastor says, be chairman of the board. She's always telling stories about the good old days and has the goods on everyone, dead or alive, and she's not slow to mention it. Why, just recently she sent a note to the pastor because, as she said, a number of the older people had come to her with concerns. And you can be sure the pastor will look into this. The pastor, by the way, has been at the church for only about 5 years, an upstart by comparison. "I am the pastor's thorn in the flesh," says Aunt Gertie, not entirely joking. Aunt Gert holds such power in the church, the pastor feels bound to put up with her, because there will be repercussions if he doesn't. And then there's Pastor Tom. He feels very hesitant to confront Brother Martin's difficult behavior. You see, Brother Martin has a high-paying, high-status job and contributes twice as much as any other giver in the church. Pastor Tom would like to think that he is no respecter of persons and that he fully trusts God to provide. But he admits it is really hard to go to Brother Martin because he's afraid that if the relationship deteriorates even further, Brother Martin will leave the church and take his money, of course, along with him. So I give you these examples to show how the pastor really has a different row to hoe with his difficult people than others do in the church. If he and his difficult person don't get things worked out on a personal level, there could be much wider negative implications for many other people and for the ministry as a whole. How about the needy people? The high-maintenance people that gravitate to the pastor, who often become difficult if not sufficiently attended to. These people take an inordinate amount of time and energy, but it's naturally assumed by many in the church that it's the pastor's duty to take care of these people. In thinking about this, I have a confession to make. Now, dear old Mrs. Reed has long since gone to glory, so I'm sure that she's forgiven me. But growing up, dear old Mrs. Reed was my mother's difficult person, or one of them. Of course, my mother was too gracious to really say that. She would say, "Oh, dear, Mrs. Reed is very lonely, and that's why she calls our home so often." She would call our house and just want to talk to my mom. And this would happen numerous times during the week. And to my young eyes, it seemed that it always came at the time when mom was fixing supper or doing something else that was pretty important. She just wanted to talk, did dear old Mrs. Reed, and to tell my mom all over again how hard life was for her. I would come wafting through the kitchen, and I would hear my mother interject every once in a while a sympathetic, or yes, or oh, that must be difficult for you. And I would know that it was Mrs. Reed on the phone. One day, something happened. I don't know if something was burning on the stove or whatever. And Mrs. Reed was in the middle of a long story. And although my mother tried to interject, she continued. And my mother looked imploringly and mutely at me. And I took the phone. I took the receiver. My mother left to attend to whatever was the problem. And I continued with the very same interjections of sympathy that I'd heard my mom do so many times. Dear old Mrs. Reed was none the wiser. She continued with her story for quite some time, well over 5 minutes, until my mother was able to come back to the phone. My mom took the receiver and never missed a beat. She just carried on. See, it was just assumed in our household that that's what a pastor's wife does, takes care of people like dear old Mrs. Reed, and it didn't seem to matter what time of day or how inconvenient that was. My mother didn't question it. It was just part of the sacrifice for being in the ministry. Here's another way the pastor's difficult person is unique. Perhaps he's a frustrated backseat driver, the person who would like to be shaping the vision and direction of the church himself, and certainly thinks he knows how to do it better than the pastor does. Shelley of Well-Intentioned Dragon says that often these people had once desired to go into ministry themselves and are frustrated because they would like to be in the position of calling the shots, and they're not. So instead, they hit on the hapless pastor. And then the pastor has his difficult people that are sort of the church's doctrine monitors. We're not talking about the pastor having any doctrinal error here, but there are people who seem to take it upon themselves to watch out for the slightest little biblical quirk and to ferret it out and roundly criticize it. So if you do not have every theological I dotted and every theological T crossed the way this person thinks it should be, you will be viewed with wholesale suspicion. And the doctrine monitor will see that such news gets out really fast. In my opinion, it's getting harder to be a pastor. And the pastor is faced with a whole array of difficult people that I think in generations past he didn't have to contend with, at least not in quite the same way. Clergy used to have the best mental health and longevity statistics of any profession. It is now reported, though, that after once being an insurer's dream, clergy generate statistics and actuarial data similar to the general public. Pastors, we know, are moving or resigning their churches at an increasing rate. There are various statistics on this, but one estimate puts it at about an average of every 4 years that the pastor moves or resigns, while the average for a pastor's tenure 20 years ago was about 7 years. Leadership Magazine did a national survey of Protestant clergy and found that 23% of pastors had been fired at least once, and of those, 63% said a faction of less than 10 people had forced them out. The pastor has a unique set of difficult people to deal with just by the nature of the pastorate as it is understood in modern American culture. This, I believe, is a new and emerging phenomenon, which is, frankly, unbiblical. The pastor in the book of Acts was to devote himself to prayer and the preaching of the word, right? He wasn't supposed to be waiting on tables. However, today's pastor, and the majority are pastors of small congregations of under 200, has to be involved with counseling, planning, youth programs, organization, visitation, and be ready to do every jack-in-the-trade job in the church, from mowing the grass to running off the bulletins on Sunday morning. Because there are powerful and powerfully vague expectations, the pastor feels he must be prepared to do anything and everything, because after all, his job is on the line. No other job is like this. Pastor is supposed to do the pastoral care, but that is much harder than even a generation ago, when families were more stable and when there was much less divorce. Now the pastor has many more and many more serious crises brewing in his church at any given time. Listen to what an inner city church leader is saying. She says that the culture that the people in her church, by and large, have grown up in doesn't consider premarital sex a sin. The norm for many of the children is that their mother has a live-in boyfriend, and they're exposed to drugs, alcohol, gambling, gangs, and other immoral acts. One little boy in the church stated that he didn't know anybody who was married, and he was totally surprised when he found out that those at church who were referred to as Mr. and Mrs. were actually married. This concept was quite new to him, something he heard about on television or the movies. The child was 9 years old, and yet no one in his family was married. And this church leader said that is a typical child of the kind that we deal with in our church. Well, this certainly isn't the environment, is it, of a generation or so ago, where the family systems were far more stable and where children were growing up, by and large, in two-parent homes. Here's another way that it's getting harder to do the work of the pastorate. In years past, there might have been respect for the office of the pastor, but that is decreasing. People today are losing the understanding of how to respect elders in general. And as for submission to spiritual authority, what does that mean? We have a whole generation which has prided itself on disrespect. Bumper stickers tell the story. If the people lead, the leaders will follow, says one. Or, question authority, says another. The average adult distrusts authority, be it political leaders, they're all phony, the police, they're out to get you, or the church, all they want is your money. Why then should we wonder that parishioners don't know how to honor their pastor, to respect him not only for who he is, but for the office he holds? Certainly, we're not to kowtow to a system of rank, but there is not the same deference in the culture for authority figures anymore, that's for sure. Parishioners feel much freer to be difficult. Not that they would say this consciously, but after all, they are the consumers, and they have a right to a good product and a right to openly complain if the product isn't to their liking. That's just how the culture is. Along with this, the church as a whole has become much more congregationally driven in past decades. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but I am saying that congregants now have much more say in decision-making processes, and that can make for a whole new arena for emergent difficult people. So, for example, a church member can come and give his opinion to the pastor, but then he can feel very disgruntled because the pastor doesn't seem to be turning around and implementing it. Well, that all leads me to the point of saying that pastors, in fact, any leadership positions, are targets for criticism. As Winston Churchill says, I do not at all resent criticism, even when, for the sake of emphasis, it for a time parts company with reality. Or, as one wag put it, If you're kicked in the rear, it must be because you're out in front. Expect it if you're a pastor or a leader. Don't even bother to ask, why me? Why am I being targeted for criticism? I was just a nice guy out of seminary wanting to do the will and the work of God. But as Stuart Briscoe has said, the qualifications of a pastor have to be these. He must have the mind of a scholar, the heart of a child, and the hide of a rhinoceros. Surely, no one, not one of you pastors out there, would desire to be a pastor unless you were utterly convinced you were called to the job by God Himself. Why else would you ever want to do this? And for such little pay at that. It doesn't seem to matter what the church, what the denomination, the size of your church, the ethnic background, the age, the cultural norms, anyone in leadership experiences not just criticism, but the fact that people are often coyly arrogant and gratingly hypocritical in their criticism. This is so typical. I was finishing leading a worship service, which I thought had been wonderful. I felt that the Holy Spirit was powerfully present. And it's true that many people came to me afterwards and verified that. However, also, I heard within a few short hours afterwards that the music was too high. The music was too low. The music was too soft. We couldn't hear it over here. The music was too loud. It was just deafening. The worship session itself was too long, except for those who said it was way too short. And that new song, it was repeated way too often, except for those folks that said it was not repeated often enough. How do you expect that we're going to learn and so be able to really worship if you don't play it enough? Well, as I say, I got all of this quite shortly after the worship service was over. Oh, but then maybe your church isn't like that. Maybe yours is different. If so, you could invite me sometime. I'll come and do worship for you. So, pastors and worship leaders are targets for criticism, or should we say, helpful suggestions. Sometimes it's the position itself that seems to invite criticism. There are certainly those in the church that are power hungry and jealous of your leadership authority. They have residual issues with previous authorities, and the pastor gets the fallout. Pastors are understandably wary of the parishioner who always wants to give a little constructive criticism, whatever that is, or feels called to point out areas of inadequacy in the pastor's life and ministry. Sometimes pastors must feel like the Old Testament prophets who were frequently lamenting what seemed to be their lot, constant dissension with the children of Israel for giving words that were not to the Israelites' liking. The prophet Jeremiah was among the most vocal. Alas, my mother, that you gave me birth, a man with whom the whole land strives and contends. Jeremiah 15:10. Paul often sounds like a rather weary spiritual leader, doesn't he? He writes to the Corinthian church, I'm afraid that when I come, I may not find you as I want you to be, and you may not find me as you want me to be. I fear that there may be quarreling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, factions, slander, gossip, arrogance, and disorder. 2 Corinthians 12:20. So Paul was criticized, as was Moses, as was Joshua, as was especially Jesus. I also recall various leaders I know and deeply respect and remember their war stories about critical people. And it helps to think I'm in good company. Certainly when a church is losing members, congregants criticize the pastor even more and blame him for all the problems that are occurring. Because there are such unrealistic high expectations on the pastor, aren't there? The pastor is held responsible for the success or failure of the church. He's expected to fix things, to right wrongs, to bring in the crowds, the finances. He's scapegoated if the church isn't successful. But what does successful mean? That's slightly different for every parishioner in the church. The pastor is expected to be on call 24 hours a day. As I said before, parishioners try to compare their job to the pastor's, but it certainly doesn't fit. While the majority of people work from 9 to 5, the pastor works all the time. But to many people, it doesn't seem like he's quite working at all. You know, they call him up and have a little chat with him over the phone. And so they get the idea that, well, that's what the pastor does in the day. He sits around waiting to give people little chats, except for the time when he goes out with one of the parishioners to a restaurant for lunch and gets treated, no less. So much of what it seems as if he's doing seems to be what the rest of us would do in our time off. He's going around visiting the parishioners. So people are very critical of how the pastor spends his time, how he spends his money, because we are paying him to do this job, remember, how he spends his recreational time, who his friends are, although he's supposed to treat everyone the same. The pastor's given little grace. He's expected to practice what he preaches, exempt from the foibles and temptations of the man in the pew. Even though we no longer recognize a clergy-laity split in theory, still, many pastors are victims of a totally unrealistic, exalted view of what and who he should be. Of course, the pastor is accountable to the board, and he's accountable to the people. But if he were accountable only for those areas that were actually down in writing, it would be easy. But that's not really so. The pastor is also accountable to his congregation, often in mysterious ways he doesn't realize until he puts his foot in it. How can he figure out why someone is being difficult when he has broken some unspoken rule and doesn't even know it? As one church conflict expert said recently, "I have just observed a phenomenon that happens all too often. A group of 15 disgruntled people in a church of 3,000 has single-handedly brought about the resignation of the pastor." So there are unrealistically high expectations on the pastor, but it is the same for the pastor's family. You know how it is. His lovely, devoted, and gifted wife, and his dear, adorable, perfect children are to be the ultimate exemplary family. Yes, his wife is to be beyond reproach. She should be able to run the Sunday school, organize the women's ministry, play the piano, of course, and have a tidy house that is ready to meet parishioners at any time. Likewise, about those sweet model children. They're all so talented, so good-looking, and beautifully behaved. One survey found that 94% of pastors who responded felt pressure to have an ideal family, and 63% said that high congregational expectations brought problems in their marriage. Do you know what the most stressful job is? Even more stressful than an air traffic controller? Yep, it's the job of being the pastor's wife. Well, this is what one pastor's wife had to say about the office of her husband. It's Ruth Truman in Underground Manual for Ministers' Wives. And she says as follows, "There is no other job on earth that expects a man to work every possible waking moment, to comfort the sick and dying, to be the tower of strength for the bereaved or the anxious bridegroom, to counsel the maritally afflicted, to pray at a moment's notice, to be all wise in the problems of childcare and in family jousting, to administer a large budget, to raise money for loan payments without issuing bonds, to run a church program efficiently with an all-volunteer staff that serves when it feels like it, to act as building and grounds maintenance supervisor, to prepare miraculously and preach eloquently, to dress meticulously but not too well, to be a saint in all interpersonal relationships with language that even your grandmother couldn't question, to love his children and see that they are raised in an exemplary manner, to keep his own marriage and personal habits above question, to be never grossly or netly either in debt, and to set a pattern of living that all can follow in personal faith and spiritual development. In case you've forgotten what I'm talking about, says Ruth Truman, I'm talking about the job description for that man of God commonly known as the minister. Well, here's one final example about the pastor being a target for criticism. This is a newly installed young pastor, and he's talking to his aged song leader about maybe not singing the same two songs every Sunday. So how about, as the pastor says, if I tell you the subject of my message and make a few song suggestions that would really go along with the theme? But the song leader disregards the suggestions and continues to use the same old two songs. The pastor later finds out that this has been done every Sunday morning for the past 8 years. And he doesn't count on such a backlash when he tries to make a change. More than the song leader becomes difficult. And the predominantly older congregation now begin to see this young man as generally problematical. But not to worry. A retired minister is currently going around to the disgruntled members and saying, give this man a little bit more time, but don't worry, I'll become your pastor if he doesn't quite work out. Well, the pastor is certainly a target for criticism, but he also sets himself up as a target. He tries to be perfect, even though he'd readily say he's just a sinner saved by grace, like everyone else. The writer Jeff Van Vonderen says, one of his seminary professors said to his class of pastors in training, don't ever show people you struggle. Don't ever be vulnerable when you're in the pulpit. Don't ever show any neediness. People are looking at you to see how to live. You set the standard. In other words, don't ever be real. The pastor feels consciously or unconsciously that he and his family must live up to such high expectations or he won't be good enough to keep his job. He also feels bound to answer the demands of chronically displeased people. He can't keep everyone happy. He knows that in theory, but still he tries. And in doing so, he's bound to disappoint and once again set himself up as a target for criticism.